Well, the title of the message this morning is What David Saw in the Wife of Another Man. And I suspect that that may strike some as being an unusual title, especially on Mother's Day, as today is. And especially since I do intend to direct this lesson in basically in that direction, and to talk some about mothers and some traits particularly that would be noble in women who raise the children that she bears to her husband. And many, I'm sure, would think, well, that would be a good lesson, but how in the world do you get that out of David's seeing the wife of another man? I mean, that got him into trouble, did it not? And that's true. And one of the most tragic events in the life of King David, his sin with Bathsheba, produced terrible consequences in his life that were far-reaching. And there was really nothing good in the conduct and the actions of David in his sin with Bathsheba. But that's not the lady that I want to talk to you about. In 1 Samuel chapter 25, we have the record of David's encounter with a man by the name of Nabal. Now, we will not have the time to read or talk about the entire chapter, but it's an interesting chapter in the life of David. It's during that time when he has fallen out of disfavor with King Saul. David is not the king at this point in his life, but he is fleeing from Saul and from the armies of Saul, trying to avoid capture and certain death at the hands of the king. And in the course of his attempt to escape capture, he encounters this man named Nabal. Now, it's worth your knowing that the man's name, Nabal, has a significant meaning. His name means fool. And if anyone was ever rightly named, it was this man, Nabal. The story that's told in this chapter is about David with his men being in the area where Nabal lived, and how David and his men encountered the servants of Nabal, particularly the shearers, those that would shear the sheep that Nabal possessed. For Nabal was a very wealthy man. David and his men would encounter these servants of Nabal, but they always treated them respectfully. And these are things you'll just have to glean from your reading of the chapter. But they always treated these servants of Nabal very respectfully. As a matter of fact, in the course of the chapter, one of the servants, speaking about their encounter with David's men, indicates that they never were mistreated by them, and that David's men actually had been like a wall around the servants of Nabal. They were fighting men, David's men, and they had provided security for Nabal's servants as they conducted their work. Now, this all becomes critical because there came a day, it was a feast day, when David and his men, like everyone else in the kingdom, were to observe a feast. But David and his men didn't have the supplies for that, and so David sent messengers to Nabal to request of Nabal that he provide for them the needed supplies for this feast. And Nabal responded in a very rude and a very coarse way. He asked the question, well, who is this David that I should respond to him? Well, he knew very well who David was. Everybody in the kingdom knew who David was. Nabal went on to say, well, you know, these days there are many people who are rebelling against their masters. He was implying, of course, that that was what David was doing. David was never the rebel. David was fleeing for his life. even in the previous chapter, in 1 Samuel chapter 24, we see where King Saul had actually fallen into the hands of David, so to speak. David had the opportunity to have easily killed Saul. His men encouraged him to do it. And David said, no, I won't do that. I won't lift my hand against the Lord's anointed. I'm not going to strike the king. David was no rebel. But that was exactly what Nabal was implying. Well, what happens, of course, is that the messengers that David had sent and who were repulsed in this way by Nabal returned to David, told him what Nabal had said. David became angry. He raised a force of 400 men and set out marching to where Nabal was, and he was going to kill him. One of Nabal's servants went and spoke to Nabal's wife, Abigail, and told Abigail what Nabal had done. And in fact, in the course of telling her what her husband had done, he said, in essence, you know what a worthless man he is. It was an interesting thing for a servant to say about his master, but he felt that he could say it to Abigail. And Abigail knew exactly what kind of man Nabal was. And so she gathered up supplies that were necessary for David's men, and she went out without her husband knowing it to meet David and pled with him that he would not do what he was intending to do. And so we're going to talk about what David saw in this woman, Abigail, the wife of another man. Paul Harvey used to have that famous radio program in which he would talk about the rest of the story. He'd tell you about the life and the events of some person's life, and then he would come back after a commercial break and say, now here's the rest of the story. Well, the rest of this story is that what David saw in Abigail was so attractive to him that when Nabal died, not by David's hands, but by God's hand, when Nabal died just a few days after these events, David took Abigail to be his wife. And she became mother to some of his children. Do you see the Mother's Day tie-in now? What David saw in the life, or what he saw in the wife, I'll get it right here in a minute since I'm the one that's talking about this. What David saw in the wife of another man. I've seen the same thing in the wife of another man. My father's wife. As we talk about Abigail, it may very well be that you will see some characteristics in the wife of another man. The first thing that we, I think, see in this chapter, in verse 3, is that Abigail is described as a beautiful woman. Verse 3 says, now the man's name was Nabal, his wife's name was Abigail, and the woman was intelligent and beautiful in appearance. Guys, I got some good news for you. There's nothing wrong with marrying a beautiful woman. But now we need to understand something about beauty. Beauty is subjective. Beauty and what is judged as physical beauty changes from time to time in different periods of history. It changes from culture to culture. It is different in the eyes of individuals, in different individuals. I dare say that if we went around this room and asked each person here to describe the physical traits of beauty, we would get a very diverse kind of list. Beauty is a subjective matter. But what we also need to understand about physical beauty is that however it is judged, whatever culture you're in and whatever time of history you're in, whatever personal judgment you might have about physical beauty, whatever you judge to be physically beautiful, it is vain. In the book of Proverbs, in the 31st chapter, in the 30th verse, in that great description of the worthy woman, the wise man says, beauty is vain. Now, a lot of times when we hear that word vain, we think that what it means is bad. You know, we hear, you remember the song here not too long ago? You're so, well, it has been a long time ago. You're so vain. We think of vanity and that which is vain as being something bad. In the Bible, that's really not the way it's used in most instances anyway. What it means in the Bible when vanity, for instance, in the book of Ecclesiastes, vanity of vanities, all is vanity, the wise man said there. What was he saying? Everything's evil? No. Everything about this life is wrong? No. It's transitory. It's temporary. It doesn't last. It's not enduring. That which is vain in the Bible is that which is passing with that passes with time. And physical beauty, whoever judges it, whatever standard by which it is analyzed, it is vain. It passes. With age, with time, it passes. But now, you know, the Bible does speak about a beauty, however, that is not transitory. It doesn't vanish with the passing of time. Psalms, the 27th chapter, and in the 4th verse, we see that beauty is an attribute assigned to the Lord. The psalmist writes about the beauty of the Lord. Let me ask, what does the Lord look like? Physically, how would you... Well, of course we know that's not possible to describe that. We're not talking about the same kind of beauty there. There is a beauty that is an attribute of the Lord's. There is a beauty that can reside within a man or a woman that is not physical beauty, but it is an inner beauty. And I think all of us recognize that. And it can be present when, since we're talking about the wives here, or the wife of another man, like Abigail, it could be a beauty that was present in her youth when physically she was beautiful. But it was a beauty that could be just as present, just as vibrant, maybe even increased in her old age, when physical beauty was something that would not necessarily have been assigned to her at that point in life. But it's a beauty still that's just as real. It's far more important. But when David saw the wife of Nabal, he saw a beautiful woman. But I want you to know that it was also said in this 3rd verse that she was a woman of intelligence. She was a woman with good understanding. She was a woman with wisdom. The understanding of what is right and what is wrong. An understanding that was unclouded by standards that might have been devised to obscure the lines between what's right and what's wrong. Why did she collect those supplies and go out to David? Because she knew it was the right thing to do. Whether her husband was willing to do it or not, she knew it was the right thing to do, and she did it. Why? Because she was a woman of wisdom. She was a woman of understanding. When David saw that woman approach him, he not only saw a woman who had the supplies that he wanted for his men, he saw a woman who came with wisdom. You look in verse 14 through 17 of the chapter. It says that one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, "Behold, David sent messengers from the wilderness to greet our master, and he scorned them. Yet the men were very good to us, and we were not insulted, nor did we miss anything as long as we went about with them while we were in the fields. They were a wall to us, both by night and by day, all the time we were with them tending the sheep. Now, therefore, know and consider what you should do, for evil is plotted against our master and against his household, and he is such a worthless man that no one can speak to him." Do you get the sense of what this man is saying? Why didn't he go and tell Nabal, "Hey, David's coming to kill you"? It's because Nabal wouldn't listen. It's because Nabal was Nabal. A fool. He was exactly what his name said. Why did he go to Abigail? Because she's no fool. She's a woman of wisdom. She's a woman of understanding. When David saw her, that's what he saw. She's also a woman of foresight, verse 28 through 31. She now approaches David. And listen to what she says to him. "Please forgive," this is verse 28, "please forgive the transgression of your maidservant, for the Lord will certainly make for my Lord an enduring house, because my Lord is fighting the battles of the Lord. And evil will not be found in all your days. Should anyone rise up to pursue you and to seek your life, then the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living with the Lord your God. But the lives of your enemies he will sling out as from the hollow of a sling. And when the Lord does for my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you, and appoints you ruler over Israel, this will not cause grief or a troubled heart to my Lord, both by having shed blood without cause and by my Lord having avenged himself. When the Lord deals well with my Lord, then remember your maidservant." Do you get what this woman is saying to him? She's saying to him, "Please forgive. Please do what a king can and should do." Why would she speak to him like that? She refers throughout these verses to what the Lord is going to do for my Lord. She's saying what the Lord of heaven is going to do for you, David. Did you catch it when she said, when you're raised up, when you become ruler, you won't have to look back when you're king at events like what you're fixing to do and have some remorse over it? Regret about what you did? But you can take the throne, you can become what God has said He is going to make you. And you can do it without this kind of, without regrets about what you did in earlier days. And when this happens, she says, when this happens, remember your maidservant. Boy, she's a woman of great foresight, a woman of great faith. This is a statement about her belief in God, in all that God has said that He would do for David. And then the final characteristic I want you to see with me about this woman and what David saw when in the wife of another man, he saw humility. If you drop down to verse, we'll begin the reading in verse 39. When David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Blessed be the Lord who has pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal and has kept back his servant from evil. The Lord has also returned the evil doing of Nabal on his own head." Then David sent a proposal to Abigail to take her as his wife. When the servants of David came to Abigail at Carmel, they spoke to her, saying, "David has sent us to take you as his wife." She arose and bowed her with her face to the ground and said, "Behold, your maidservant is a maid to wash the feet of my Lord's servants." Then Abigail quickly arose and rode on a donkey with her five maidens who attended her, and she followed the messengers of David and became his wife. here's the woman who is going to become the wife of a king. She knows that. What does she do? She arose and bowed with her face to the ground and said, "Behold, your maidservant is a maid to wash the feet of my Lord's servants." She was a woman who remained humble. Now, here's what I want you to think about with me in just a moment or two, and then we'll close. This is what David saw in the wife of another man. And it was certainly not bad for him to see this. What he saw and the way he saw it was certainly, in this case, far superior to what he saw and the way he saw Bathsheba. I suppose this sermon maybe is not so much about mothers on Mother's Day. I guess it's really a sermon more to those of you that have mothers or have had mothers. The rest of you don't have to pay attention. It's really a lesson not so much about the woman as it is about the man. What do you see in your mother? And I understand very well that not all mothers are Abigails. Some are Jezebels. But my point to you is this. If your mother was or is an Abigail, and you don't appreciate it, and you don't see in her these traits that David saw in Abigail, then my friend, your name is Nabal. And you will go through life as a Nabal, a fool. For it is only a fool who has had the care of such a mother. It is only a fool who has a wife who is this kind of a mother to his children. It is only a fool who doesn't see it and appreciate it. God help us not to be Nabal. Now, there are many ways to be a fool in this life. What we talked about in not recognizing these qualities in the women of our lives. That's just one way of being foolish, not appreciating that. Another way to be a fool in this life is to go through this life without the Lord. And in that, we find Abigail. What an outstanding example to us of how to go through this life well. Those qualities that she demonstrated can and should be part of each and every one of us. We cannot be right with God without exhibiting the same kinds of qualities that Abigail demonstrated. If you want to be a child of God, it will produce beauty in your life, not physical, but it will produce an enduring beauty in your life that will last eternally. But it will require that you have good understanding and that you have the foresight to know what God has said and what God has talked about as being His future plans. And your conviction and commitment to the fact that God can do that. And I believe it, and I put everything about my well-being in the cares of his, in the care of his hands. And then with humility, like Abigail's, be willing to submit, to make yourself nothing more than a servant to God. It's foolish to try to live life in any other fashion. Jesus told us how to do those things. When he called upon men and women to believe that he is God's Son, to turn from their sins, to repent of them, confessing their faith in him, to be baptized, to wash the guilt of their sins away. In so doing, they would become God's children. They would enter into God's family, living a life of faithful service to him, demonstrating those kinds of qualities that Abigail had. We can look forward to a home in heaven, having the sure promise of God that those who would serve him faithfully in their life would be rewarded after this. Don't be foolish and try to live some other way. Be an Abigail, not a Nabal. Are you subject to his invitation? If you are, then we encourage you to come in obedience to him while we stand and sing.